Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Oresic. Peter Oresic is the author of many books, including Warhol-O-Rama, Definitions, Other Lives, The Story of Glass, and the chapbooks To a Museum Guard at Shift Change and An American Peace. He has edited a number of anthologies, including For a Living, The Poetry of Work, and Working Classics, Poems on Industrial Life, both of those with Nick Coles. Also, the Pittsburgh Book of Contemporary American Poetry with Ed Ochester. Oresic has also edited the work of other poets, Fermi Buffalo by Louise McNeil, and Despite the Plainness of Day, Love Poems by David Ignatow. He is at work on the forthcoming The Pittsburgh Novel, A Reader's Guide to Western Pennsylvania in Fiction, 1792 to 2013. Peter Oresic earned his college tuition in the 1970s during summers laboring for the Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company. He worked as a publisher for 22 years and as a high school teacher, a poet in the schools, and director of master's programs in both publishing and creative writing. His new book, Iconoscope, was just released by the University of Pittsburgh Press in October 2015. This new and selected includes 36 new poems called Under the Carpathians. His work, known for working class and Catholic themes, probes labor and social history, post-World War II America, Eastern European identity, Eastern Rite Catholicism, and Russian icons and fine art, and especially Pittsburgh-born pop art icon Andy Warhol. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Hi. How are you? I'm good.
Great. I'm so excited about this new book, and I know you are too.
Yes, I'm thrilled.
Okay. So you said you're going to read some new poems from the book.
Yes, I'd like to do that. This poem is called Ruthenia. I forget Ruthenia daily, fondly. Daisy chain of mountain hamlets my ancestors fled by foot, by rail, by sail, forswearing Ruthenia. A cloud of memories drifting from the simmering peasant pot, or the Cold War map I hunched above in grammar school. For 500 years, we barely evolved in Ruthenia, where religion was the cabbage, and the songbird was the gypsy, and the heraldic achievement was the red bear on hind legs, its tongue flicking, a field of silver on the sinister side, stripes on the dexter, split by the golden trident of Vladimir the Great. Which sounds baronial, but it is true. As the primary chronicle records, he chose Byzantium over Mecca, after deliberation with boyars, because drinking is the joy of the Rus. When I return to the Ruthenia, I will fly by way of London with vodka miniatures and in-flight movies. I will kiss the earth. I will peck each cheek. You never unlearn Ruthenia when your blood is from Ruthenia, like playing drinking games. I will forget America slowly during my sojourn among the oaks, the lindens, the Carpathian ash, as I loaf in the undergrowth and then the miserium, in the honeysuckle where I spy voles and black storks and the hazel grouse as I sigh aloud. But my mother is America. I love to live in America where the state religion is exuberance unregulated, and the songbird is the iPod, and the national pastime is ritualized violence. It is 5,000 miles and 7 centuries from Rusinko to New York, and her beacon hand ablaze. The land is light and harbor dark, and the door is always open, Ruthenia. You alone are real to us. Morning, Allegheny River. Silence. No moon in the heavens. Stars that spin and pivot, nuanced, never resting. Again, a longing. Forget it. Suddenly, everything is dimly visible, not yet flushed by dawn. The bushes dewy, the cinders slick, the train rails glow light and cold and bluish. I piss and spit. A breeze flutters. My body responds with a shudder of delight. The dog smiles. I walk along the bank toward home. Hills greening again, the brown river sliding under the vapors, the sun up and over and refracting the black iron bridge. No endings, just the pure notes of a car horn ascending. When icons weep. When icons weep, you are already dizzy from sin and an urge to run away, the gift of tears seeping up through the hard varnish, pooling, streaking in rivulets the virgin's cheek. You feel the crimson in your face, tears that lack water or basic salts, oil-like and redolent like myrrh. Like the chrism given off by the incorruptible corpses of certain saints. Balanced and sober is the composition of this icon, despite the massive left hand. Her face displays a grief contained. Bending forward, you face a shamantic terror. You're drifting again. Toward your own death? Change the subject. What year is this? Which parish? Why do icons weep? They're hung under onion domes, the priest grins. Это правда, it's true. From the hour they are blessed, the blessed mourn. Hers are the genuine tears of lament. This church reeks of sweat and lilies, and the chicory blue cloak of the central angel simply radiates vividness and purity. And when joined with wings, the color of ripe corn, you weep too. This may be your last time before such a spectacle, and you had dreaded it because you knew that when it's over, it's still not over.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Oresic. He's reading from his new book, Iconoscope, New and Selected Poems from the University of Pittsburgh Press. And, you know, I just want to congratulate you again on this book. And I don't really want to ask you questions because I want to listen to your poems. but I will.
You can ask a question or two.
Yeah, I do want to ask about, I don't know what the word is, your obsession maybe, or your deep interest in icons. I mean, it's all through your work, the sense of history, but more than that, this, I don't know, is it an obsession with you?
It is.
Okay.
And it started when I was very young. In my church, my father was the treasurer, and they had hired a iconographer who was an escapee from during World War II from Europe, who was a trained iconographer to redo our parish. And I watched that as a kid while they were on scaffolding in that kind of Michelangelo way. And I have been mesmerized by that ever since. The next thing that sort of happened for me is I became a writer and reader and writer. And then about 20 years ago, I learned that I could take training in icon painting myself. So that was the real pivot point for me, my kind of midlife pivot. And so I've been painting seriously, being trained, having been trained by many master iconographers, and it's changed the poetry as well,
mm-hmm.
obviously. And I do lots of painting as well. So mm-hmm. I have poems about painting perhaps more than I did before.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were that young boy watching
yes.
that, did you know at the time that how big that was for you? Did you know that
no.
that you would write about it? No.
No, I had no clue. But once they left, took down the scaffolding, and then it became the narrative of my church and faith and et cetera, I still couldn't keep, I couldn't stop looking at particularly eyes, facial expressions, how that was, you know, done. And then again, I spent the rest of my life figuring no one can do this unless you're a monk or something. So once I was able to become part of that special group of people, I felt like I had been in the best poetry workshop I'd ever been in.
Well, when you were reading the poem, the Allegheny River poem, I was also thinking of icons. When you said, when you mentioned the Black Iron Bridge, that just seems like an icon of Pittsburgh, of the steel mills. I mean, I wonder if you look at it that way.
I do. Mm-hmm. And I think particularly, because most of my early work was traditional working class poetry, ethnic poetry, and such that I was much more of a narrative poet, I think, more of a storyteller. And now I feel like the poems are more imagistic, not necessarily in the Ezra Pound sense of the word, but in the iconographic sense of the word.
Okay. Okay, because I mean, yeah, I feel the difference in your work, and I still feel the narrative, so I'll listen some more, but could you read some more?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This poem is called That Summer, and it's a bit of a narrative or meditation on this time just before my mother's passing. That summer, I loathed beer, its bitter rinse over the salted tongue. That August, I accepted Pinot Noir as a personal savior. I craved its blush and the notion of the sweet that summer. I let my son do the grilling. I didn't need control for once. That 4th of July, I ate steak, braised and rare, a sense of fullness. I passed on desserts the size of planets. I yapped. I was stupidly satisfied that summer. Spirited, buff-bodied, my mind for hours like a Learjet thrusters forward to cruising altitude. I didn't listen. I didn't notice your death like a train in the distance. I focused on your breath, your eyes, shifting from ceiling to wall, then closing, then blinking awake. I focused on your radio and its loop of continuous song. I focused on your eyes, closed again, your raspy breath, your purple tongue. Autumn evening at the window with brushes. Crimson clouds, a low-angled sun, redness deepening. It's an art to see shapes in clouds or to spot a silhouette. At the end of a painting lesson, I am contented by the gurgle of faucet and soap. I love working brush bellies with thumb and forefinger, rinsing, scraping the ferrule with my nails, swabbing blotter cloth till no more pigment dislodges, or I repeat the massage. Sable martyrs boast a belly that wicks, reservoirs the paint, allows a painter to increase pressure and broaden a line so the pigment flows slowly, evenly, composing sleek curves. Clouds drift, unravel. I dress a clean brush to original form, tipping the needle to a point. Finest sable is Kolinsky of northern Siberia, where cruel climate breeds hair that's robust yet supple. Springy, absorbent, Kolinsky sells at the price of gold, factored three, as the old Soviets say. The cheap brushes a false economy. I rotate the brush 90 degrees and repeat without reloading a Kolinsky. It's a tool I work methodically, yet without method, seemingly, and Mars red unbinds like a spirit emulsified. Color drains and cycles into endless forms. Sable brushes stand on handles, not on their heads. They dry naturally in a jar on a windowsill, giving best results when cared for properly and last a lifetime. Paper plates. Forget the thumb dents on the mottled cheese or how the bread got foul and this dull knife. Forget how the wind whips sand to your damn eyes and ants march precisely in precision. Your mother fed you at times from paper plates. Paisley plates won't hold your mother's face. They assume aspects according to memory. Continuous tones of black and white and black. A picnic is no picnic. See the dune view, the girdling line of the horizon, how stars fade in at dusk. Remember your mother. Dive down now in the churchyard grasses, breaking up once and for all our charmed family circle.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Oresic. He's reading new poems from his new and selected Iconoscope, just released from the University of Pittsburgh Press. You know, I'm always, you know, I've, you know, followed your work for many years, of course, and admired it, but I'm still always surprised by the keen attention to detail, you know, the brush and the way to set the brush and 90 degrees and while at the same time...
Jan, I've been trained now.
You have been trained. But I've been trained and some of it just didn't take. You know, but while at the same time you go to the very large, you go to these huge historical stories and I just really admire how you can have that range. And I guess I want to ask you, you know, what compels you the most, if something does, about that? Are you always driven back to the small detail, or where is your allegiance?
I have to say that my midlife stage had forced me to think larger, bigger, but the reality of painting in particular has made me more precise about the language. Mm-hmm. It's really stopped me from being perhaps as verbose or as midlife, you want to sum up things. I've seen this before. I've done this. I know this. I've seen politics. I've seen whatever. So the fun part about writing now with a kind of second, you know, I feel now that I'm a poet and a painter and that the painting has really changed simply the way I write. Now, I still write draft and draft and draft of prosaic nonsense that gets trim. But I have to say that the painting has allowed me to sharpen it in ways that I didn't anticipate.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a painter, but in my mind, I would think it would go the other way, that, you know, thinking of big canvases and, you know, color and are you like really happy with that new precision? I mean, does that feel challenging?
Yeah, it does. It feels like it's a new direction for the way I work because I write a lot. I'm at my computer and I'm doing things, but as most writers, they really don't know where they're going. So it does give me a kind of target, I think, that I'm working on sometimes that I didn't normally have even when I was writing 5 or 10 years ago. So that's pretty exciting to me. I feel less compelled by traditional narrative, which I still enjoy. I'd love to hear, but I feel that poetry has to do maybe a little more. So it's been a pleasure, frankly.
Well, I mean, when I think back to the story of glass, you know.
You're really thinking back.
Well, I love that book, and you know, your working class roots, and I still feel that. I mean, there, that's always there in your work. I feel like it's always there. Is that accurate? Do you think?
I feel it's there. I absolutely do. I feel like I haven't changed in any crazy radical way as much as I've just grown in layers on top of that original kind of approach, which was clearly so influenced by my early mentors and teachers, you know, going back to Ed Ochester and Gerald Stern and Philip Levine and James Wright.
All these had some good ones
that in the beginning had a huge influence on how I began writing.
Could you read some more?
I'll read a few more.
Okay.
I hiked the Carpathians. I hiked the Carpathians hexameter by hexameter, yet couldn't find the source text I was looking for, the four idols, the first verse to laud nature in Middle Europa. I was 400 years too late to birdwatch the ancestral life, piety and moiling and submission. Over the mountains, a pale green sky. 1,000 years seemed to retreat. I colonized the taverna, its red corner, and ate my beet soup, mulling my own primitive outlook, while Ruthenia hid among the treetops, leaves rustling, as in the saga where our people don't exist yet. Only thick black trees in an autumn light and that first biting frost. This is called I Love to Sleep Curled, which is really important to me at this part of my life. I love to sleep curled on the edge under her arm, unlicensed and weaving in the spectral, chromatically climbing the 12 tones, just a boy in the air again, face to the stars, soaring, sailing soberly, watched by worshiping faces. I swear by heaven of the dream arts, I trust the body arched and soaring, and the pure labor of the dream, not the usual grief of the nation, localized yowling from the mouth, just the ripest of dreams, now dropping, now pouring like rain through hair, shampooing this sleep, seeping into the honeycomb, into the well, into the silent language of the gorgeous, while I curl on the edge, her arm above me, the pillow cradled beneath my chin.
Beautiful poem.
I'd like to read this poem. It's called November Sorrows, November Hope. All Saints, or Day of the Dead, the purples of the passage of the seasons, iconic blues and vermilion too, always drop into my pupils, large and dilated, eyes so romantic. How do I do chemotherapy? Of course, there's the science aspect. The sun and the moon come and go, rains come and go, Blake's vision fixed, the ancient of days circumscribing the world. 5 stars, 4 cardinal points, 1 center, my brain. On the left are fixed stars, on the right, clouds where I am, bedded, a survivor. Scarred veins, my skull resealed with titanium plate. At this age, I know too much. My skylight, an iris, a clear gauge of the inscrutable. November's sleep of nature sets in. It's hard to find sadness in American religion. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve. My soul passes its ordeals. Each of us judges, and in turn, each of us is judged. The heart weighed in the balance. November sorrow, November hope. Some days I can drive. Highways a fact of this life. In the land of the dead, the sun shines at night below stones. The dead enter paradise, Egyptologists say, bearing truth past guardians of the blessed West, where, always, the sun is sinking. Those who beat breasts and pour loamy dust over their heads. Just another day of weeping at the tomb. Doors open to a second world with fire, with barrels, light after darkness, and mugs of beer, platters of food, the stories irrational in form about our difficult passage. I'm going to read the story of glass. From the holes of the earth, from truck, from silo, from cullet, from scale batch tank, heat wind, from heat, from ribbon, from flow, roll, roll, from leer, they feed the line. They cross-cut, snap, they flower lights, plates, plates, plates on belts, coveys, glass, glass you grab, you pull, you lift, you pack, you kick, you count, and you turn, they feed the line. You reach, you grab, you pack, you tap, into skid, into crane, into pack, uncut and cut down, they stalk, they bay, they stack skid, skid on skid, box, and they feed the line. They multi-cut, they race one, they feed you glass and it comes, it waits, you pack, it moves, stops, and you pack, it comes, it comes, it comes without pause, it comes without thought, it comes without Jesus or Marx, it comes, you pack, they feed the line. You band, you crimp, you ship to Kuwait, Detroit, to Crestline, Ohio, they profit, it comes, they feed the line. You eat, you sleep, you bail glass from your dreams, you drown, you faint, you rest, you rage, you love, they feed the line. Glass, industry, you, from earth.
Wow, I love that poem. That is the poetry of Peter Oresic, and he's reading from his new and selected Iconoscope, just released by the University of Pittsburgh Press. Thank you so much, Peter. That was great.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.